but I would rather not sit and talk to Smug and Smugger. So I walk over to the empty table and take a seat next to my little brother.
You were right,
Smith says, looking over at me. About what, this time? I lean back against the decorated chair and wonder just how Landon and Tessa can justify calling this wedding small and simple when they have some curtain-like shit covering each and every chair in the damn place.
About weddings being boring,
Smith smiles. He's missing a few teeth, one of them a front tooth. He's sort of adorable for a brainiac kid who doesn't care for most people. I should have made you bet money, I laugh, settling my gaze on Tessa again. Smith looks at her too.
She looks pretty today.
I've been warning you off her for years now, kid. Don't make me cause a funeral at a wedding. I gently hit his shoulder, and he smiles a crooked and gap-toothed smile. I want to walk over to her table and push her nearly a doctor friend out of his chair so I can sit next to her. I want to tell her how beautiful she looks and how proud I am of her that she has been excelling at NYU. I want to watch her get past her nerves, and I want to hear her laugh and watch her smile take over the entire room. I lean toward Smith. Do me a favor.
What kind of favor?
I need you to go up and start talking to Tessa. He flushes, shaking his head rapidly.
No way.
Come on, just do it.
Nope.
Stubborn child. You know that customized train you wanted that your dad won't get for you?
Yeah.
His interest is piqued. I'll buy it for you.
You're bribing me to talk to her?
Damn right I am. The kid gives me a side glance.
When will you buy it?
If you get her to dance with you, I'll buy it next week. He negotiates.
No. For dancing, it has to be tomorrow.
Fine. Damn, he's too good at this. He looks toward Tessa's table, then back to me.
Deal,
he agrees while standing up. Well, that was easy. I watch as he walks over to her. Her smile for him, even from two tables away, knocks the breath straight from my lungs. I give him about 30 seconds before I stand and make my way to the table. I ignore the guy sitting next to her and find joy in the way her face lights up as I stand next to Smith. There you are! I rest my hands on the boy's shoulders.
Will you dance with me, Tessa?
My little brother asks. She's surprised. Her cheeks glow in embarrassment under the lighting, but I know her, and I know she won't turn him down.
Of course.
She smiles at Smith, and what's his name stands and helps her to her feet. Polite bastard. I watch as Tessa follows Smith out to the dance floor, and I'm thankful for Landon and his new wife's love for slow and sappy songs. Smith looks miserable, and Tessa looks nervous as they begin to dance. How have you been? Doctor asks me as we both watch the same woman. Fine. And you? I should be nice to the guy. He is dating the woman that I will spend my life loving. Good. I'm in my second year of medical school now. So what? Only 10 left to go? I laugh, being as nice as I can be to a guy who I know has feelings for Tessa. I dismiss myself and stride over to Tessa and Smith. She sees me first and freezes when her eyes meet mine. May I cut in? I ask, tugging at the back of Smith's dress shirt before either of them can refuse. My hands immediately move to her waist, resting on her hips. I follow her lead and freeze, feeling overwhelmed by my fingers touching her. It's been so long, too long. Since the last time I held her. She came to Chicago a few months ago for her friend's wedding, but she didn't invite me as her date. She went solo, but we met after and had dinner. It was nice. She had a glass of wine and we shared a massive mound of ice cream, topped with chocolate candies and too much hot fudge. She asked me to come back to her hotel for another drink. Wine for her, club soda for me. and we fell asleep after I made love to her on the floor of her hotel room. I thought I would save you from dancing with him. He's a little short. Terrible dance partner, I finally say when I can pull my head out of my ass.
He told me you bribed him.
She smiles at me, shaking her head.
That little fucker.
I glare at the traitor as he sits back down at a table, alone again.
You two have gotten pretty close, even since I last saw you,
she says with admiration, and I can't stop the blush rushing to my cheeks if I tried. Yeah, guess so, I shrug. Her fingers tighten on my shoulders, and I sigh. Literally, fucking sigh. And I know she can hear it.
You look very well.
She stares at my mouth. I decided to put my ring back in a few days after I saw her in Chicago. Well, I don't know if that's a good thing. I bring her closer to me, and she lets me.
Very good. Handsome. Very hot.
The last words tumble from her full lips by accident. I can tell by the way her eyes go wide, and she bites down on her lower lip. You're the sexiest woman in the room. Always have been. She tilts her head down, trying to hide in the mass of long, blonde curls.
Don't hide. Not from me,
I quietly say. Nostalgia fills me at the familiar words, and I can tell by her expression that she's feeling the same. She quickly changes the subject.
When's the release date for your next book?
Next month. Did you read it? I had an early copy sent to you.
Yes, I read it.
I take the opportunity to pull her to my chest.
I've read them all, remember?
What do you think? The song ends and another begins. As the female voice fills the room, we look into each other's eyes.
This song,
Tessa softly laughs.
Of course they would play this song.
I brush a loose curl away from her eyes, and she swallows, blinking slowly.
I'm so happy for you, Harden. You're an incredible author, an activist for self-recovery and alcohol addiction. I saw that interview you did with the Times about dealing with abuse as a child.
Her eyes well up, and I'm positive that if her tears spill, I may lose all composure. It's nothing, really, I shrug, loving her for being proud of me, but feeling guilty for what it caused her. I never expected any of this. You have to know that. I didn't mean for you to be embarrassed publicly by me writing that book. I've told her this so many times, and she always has the same positive response.
Don't worry about it.
She smiles up at me.
It wasn't so bad. And you know, you've helped a lot of people, and a lot of people love your books, me included.
Tessa flushes, and I do the same. This should be our wedding, I blurt. Her feet stop moving, and some of the glow disappears from her beautiful skin.
Harden,
she glares at me. Teresa, I tease. I'm not joking, and she knows it. I thought that last page was going to change your mind. I really did.
Can I have everyone's attention, please?
The bride's sister says through the microphone. That woman is annoying as hell. She stands on the stage in the center of the room, but I can barely see her over the table in front of her. She's just that short. I have to get ready for my speech, I groan, swiping my hand through my hair.
You're making a speech.
Tessa follows me to the designated table for the wedding party. She must have forgotten about the doctor, and I can't say that I mind that one bit. I love it, really. Yeah, I'm the best man, remember?
I know.
She gently shoves my shoulder, and I reach for her wrist. I planned to pull it to my mouth to press a kiss against the bare skin there, but I'm thrown off by a small black circle tattooed there. What the fuck is this? I bring her wrist closer to my face.
I lost a bet on my 21st birthday.
She laughs.
You actually got a smiley face tattoo.
What the hell? I can't help the laughter falling from my mouth. The tiny smiling face is so ridiculous and so poorly done that it's funny. I do wish, though, that I could have been there to see it done, and for her birthday.
Sure did,
she nods proudly, running her index finger over the ink. Do you have any more? I hope that she doesn't.
No way, just this one. Harden!
The short woman calls for me, and I carry out my intention of kissing Tessa's wrist. She jerks her hand away, not out of disgust, but out of shock, I hope, as I walk toward the stage. Landon and his wife are sitting at the head of the table, and his arm is wrapped around her back, her hands resting over one of his. Ah, newlyweds. I can't wait to see them ready to rip each other's head off this time next year. Maybe they'll be different, though. I take the microphone from the ornery woman and clear my throat. Hey! My voice sounds weird as fuck, and I can tell by Landon's face that he's going to enjoy this. I don't like talking in front of a lot of people usually. Hell, I don't even like being around people usually. So I'm going to make this quick. I promise the room full of wedding guests. Most of you are probably drunk or bored to death anyway, so feel free to ignore this.
Get to the point,
Landon's bride laughs, holding up a glass of champagne. Landon nods in agreement, and I flip them both off in front of everyone. Tessa, in the front row, laughs and covers her mouth. See, I wrote this down because I didn't want to forget what to say. I pull a crinkled napkin from my pocket and unfold it. When I first met Landon, I instantly hated him. Everyone laughs as if I'm joking, but I'm not. I did hate him, but only because I hated myself. He had everything that I wanted in life. A family, a girlfriend, a plan for his future. When I look at Landon, he is smiling, and his cheeks are slightly red. I'll blame that on the champagne. Anyway, throughout the years that I've known him, we've become friends, family even, and he has taught me a lot about being a man, especially in the last 2 years with the struggles these two have had to deal with. I smile at Landon and his bride, not wanting to get too into the depressing shit. I'm going to end this shit now. Basically, what I want to say is, I thank you, Landon, for being an honest man, and for giving me hell when I needed you to. I actually look up to you in a fucked up way, and I want you to know that you deserve to be happy and be married to the love of your life, no matter how quickly you two put this together. The crowd laughs again. You won't know how lucky you are to be able to spend your life with the other half of your soul, until you have to spend your life without them. I bring the microphone down and lay it on the table, just as I catch a glimpse of Silver rushing through the crowd, and I hurry down from the stage to follow after my girl as the crowd drinks to my toast. When I finally catch up to Tessa, she's pushing the women's bathroom door open. She disappears inside, and I don't bother to look around before following her inside. When I reach her, she's leaning against the sink, her palms resting on both sides of the marble. She looks up into the mirror, eyes red and cheeks stained with tears, and turns to face me when she realizes that I followed her.
You can't just talk about us like that, about our souls.
She ends her sentence with a whimper. Why not?
Because...
She can't seem to find an explanation. Because you know I'm right? I egg her on.
Because you can't say those things publicly like that. You keep doing it in your interviews, too.
She rests her hands on her hips. I've been trying to get your attention. I step toward her. Her nostrils flare, and for a moment I think she may actually stomp her foot.
You piss me off.
Her voice softens, and she can't deny the way she's looking at me right now.
Sure, sure.
I reach my arms out to her. Come here, I beg. She obliges, walking into my outspread arms, and I hug her. Having her in my arms this way is more satisfying than any sex we could have. Just having her here, still drawn to me in the way that only the two of us understand, makes me the happiest son of a bitch around. I've missed you so much, I say into her hair. Her hands move to my shoulders, tugging the heavy jacket off me, and the expensive cloth falls to the floor. You're sure? I hold her beautiful face between my hands.
I'm always sure with you.
I can feel the vulnerability and sweet relief as she presses her mouth to mine, lips trembling, breathing slow and deep. Too soon, I pull away, and she drops her hands from my belt. I'm just blocking the door. I'm thankful for the chairs placed in women's gathering places, and I pull two of them over to the door to keep anyone from coming inside.
We're really doing this?
Tessa asks as I lean down to lift her floor-length dress from the floor up to her waist.
Are you surprised?
I laugh into another kiss. Her mouth tastes like home to me, and I've been away from home, living in Chicago alone for so long. Only small doses of her have been granted to me over the last few years.
No.
Her fingers hurry to unzip my pants, and I gasp when she grabs my cock through my boxers. It's been a long time. Too damn long.
When's the last time you...
With you in Chicago, I urge her. You?
Same.
I pull back, looking into her eyes to find only truth behind her claim.
Really?
I ask, even though I can read her face like an open book.
Yes, no one else, only you.
She tugs my boxers down, and I lift her onto the counter, spreading her thick thighs with both hands. Fuck. I bite down on my tongue when I discover she's not wearing any panties. She looks down, flustered.
There was a line with my dress.
You're going to be the death of me, woman. I'm hard as a fucking rock when she strokes me, both of her small hands moving up and down the length of me.
We have to hurry,
she whines, desperate and soaking when I slide my finger over her clit. She groans. Her head falls back onto the mirror, and her legs open farther. Condom? I ask, barely able to think straight. When she doesn't respond, I push a finger inside her and caress her tongue with mine. Each kiss holds a confession. I love you, I try to show her. I need you. I suck at her bottom lip. I can't lose you again. I push my cock inside her and moan with her as I fill her.
So fucking tight,
I whimper. I'm going to embarrass myself by coming within seconds. But this isn't about sexual satisfaction for me. This is about showing her and me that we are truly inevitable. We are a force that can't be reckoned with, no matter how hard we try. Or anyone else tries to fight it. We belong together, and it's truly undeniable.
Oh, God!
She claws at my back as I pull out of her warmth and enter her again, this time completely. She stretches around me, her body adjusting to fit me the way it always has.
Harden!
Tessa moans into my neck. I can feel her teeth pressing against my skin as my release climbs up my spine. I move one hand to her back, pulling her closer to me, lifting her slightly to reach a deeper angle inside her, and use my other hand to grope her full tits. She spills out of her dress, and I suck at the flesh there, tugging at her hard nipples with my lips, groaning and moaning her name as I come inside her. My name comes in quick pants as I rub at her clit while driving into her. The sound of her thighs smacking against me in the counter is hot enough to have me getting hard again. It's just been so fucking long, and she's the most perfect fit for me. Her body claims mine, completely fucking owning me.
I love you,
she says as she comes. her voice strained as she loses herself with me, allowing me to find her. Tessa's orgasm seems endless, and I can't help but fucking love it. Her body goes limp, leaning into me, and she rests her head on my chest as she catches her breath. I heard that, you know. I press a kiss to her sweat-beaded forehead, and she smiles a delirious smile.
We're a mess,
she whispers, lifting her head up so that her eyes can meet mine. An undeniable, beautifully chaotic mess.
Don't go all Ryder on me,
she teases, out of breath.
Don't pull away from me.
I know you've been missing me too.
Yeah, yeah.
She wraps her arms around my waist, and I push her hair back off her forehead. I'm happy. I'm fucking ecstatic that she is here with me, after all this time, in my arms, smiling and teasing and laughing, and I'm not going to ruin this. I've learned the hard way that life doesn't have to be a battle. Sometimes you're given a shitty hand from the get-go, and sometimes you fuck up along the way. But there is always hope. There's always another day. There's always a way to make up for the shit you've done and the people you've hurt. And there is always someone who loves you, even when you feel like you're completely alone and you're just out there floating along, waiting for the next disappointment. There is always something better to come. It's hard to see, but it's there. Tessa was there, underneath the bullshit and self-loathing. Tessa was there beneath my addiction. Tessa was there beneath my self-pity and my shitty choices. She was there as I climbed my way through it. She held my hand the entire fucking way. Even after she left me, she was still there, helping me through it. I never lost hope, because Tessa is my hope. She always has been, and always will be. Will you stay with me tonight? We can leave here now. Just stay with me, I beg. She leans up again, pushing her breasts back into her dress as she looks up at me. Her eye makeup is smeared and her cheeks are red.
Can I say something?
Since when do you ask? I touch the tip of her nose with my index finger.
True,
she smiles.
I hate that you didn't try harder.
I did, but... She holds up a finger to silence me.
I hate that you didn't try harder. But it's unfair of me to even say that, because we both know that I pulled away from you. I kept pushing and pushing, expecting too much from you. And I was so angry over the book and all of the attention that I didn't want. And I let that rule my mind. I felt as if I couldn't forgive you because of other people's opinions. But now I'm angry with myself that I would even listen to that. I don't care what people say about us, or me. I only care what the people I love think of me. And they love and support me. I just wanted to say that I'm sorry for listening to voices that didn't belong in my head.
I stand in front of the counter, with Tessa still sitting in front of me, and I'm silent. I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting such a turnaround. I came to this wedding hoping for barely so much as a smile from her. I don't know what to say.
That you forgive me?
She nervously whispers.
I forgive you, of course.
I laugh at her.
Is she insane? Of course I forgive her.
Do you forgive me? For everything? Or close to everything?
Yes,
she nods, reaching for my hand. Now I really don't know what to say. I run my hand over my hair.
Maybe that you still want to marry me?
Her eyes are wide, and mine feel as if they are going to pop straight from their sockets.
What?
She flushes.
You heard me.
Marry you? You hated me like 10 minutes ago. She's truly going to be the death of me.
Actually, we were having sex on this counter 10 minutes ago.
You actually mean that? You want to marry me? I can't believe that she's saying this. There's no way in hell she's saying this. Have you been drinking? I try to recall if I tasted any liquor on her tongue.
No, I had one glass of champagne over an hour ago. I'm not drunk. I'm just tired of fighting this. We're inevitable, remember?
She mocks, using a terrible English accent. I kiss her mouth, silencing her. We are the least romantic couple that's ever been. You know that, right? My tongue swipes over her soft lips.
Romance is overrated. Realism is in.
She quotes from my latest novel. I love her. Fuck, I love this woman so fucking much. Marry me. Really? You will?
Not today or anything. But sure, I'll think about it.
She climbs down from the counter, adjusting her dress. I smile too. I know you will. I adjust my clothing, trying to understand everything that's happening in this bathroom. Tessa is somewhat agreeing to marry me. Holy fucking shit! She shrugs playfully.
Vegas! Let's go to Vegas right now!
I dig into my pocket and pull my keys out of it.
No way! I'm not getting married in Vegas. You're crazy.
We're both crazy.
Who gives a shit?
No way, Harden.
Why not? I plead, taking her face between my palms.
Vegas is a 15-hour drive.
She glances at me, then at her reflection in the mirror. Don't you think a 15-hour drive is long enough to think about it? I joke, pulling the chairs away from the door. Then Tessa truly shocks me by cocking her head and saying,
Yeah, I guess so.
Epilogue. Harden. The drive to Vegas was a daunting one. The first 2 hours were spent creating fantasy scenarios about the perfect Vegas wedding. Tessa played with the ends of her curled hair, glancing over at me with flushed cheeks and a happiness in her smile that I haven't seen in so long.
I wonder how easy it is, in reality, to be married in Vegas. Last minute, Russ and Rachel style,
she questioned, her face buried into her phone.
You're Googling it, aren't you? I asked her.
I moved my hand to her lap and cracked the window of my rental car. Somewhere outside Boise, Idaho, we stopped for food and more gas. Tessa was getting sleepy, her head leaning forward and her eyes soft and heavy. I pulled into the crowded truck stop and gently shook Tessa by her shoulder to wake her.
Vegas already?
She joked, knowing we were barely halfway there. We got out of the car, and I followed her to the bathroom. I always liked these types of gas stations. They were well lit and had full parking lots. Less chance of being murdered and whatnot. When I came out of the bathroom, Tessa was standing in one of the many snack aisles. Her arms were already full of junk, bags of crisps and chocolates, and too many energy drinks for her small hands to hold. I stood back for a moment, just staring at the woman in front of me. The woman that would be my wife in just a few hours. My wife. After all we have been through, after fighting back and forth over a marriage that, honestly, neither of us thought would actually happen, we were on our way to Vegas to make it legal in a small chapel. At 23, I would become someone's husband, Tessa's husband, and I couldn't imagine anything that could possibly make me happier. Even being the bastard I was getting a happy ending with her. She would be smiling at me, her eyes full of tears, and I would be making some stupid remark about an Elvis lookalike walking by during our wedding.
Look at all this stuff, Harden.
Tessa used her elbow to point at the enormous number of random snacks. She was dressed in those pants. Yeah, you know the ones. Those yoga pants and an NYU zip-up sweatshirt were what she was wearing on the way to her wedding. She was planning on changing when we arrived at whatever hotel we were going to check into, though. She wouldn't be wearing a wedding gown, the way I had always imagined in my head. You're okay with not wearing a wedding dress? I blurted out. Her eyes went a little wide, and she smiled, shook her head, and said,
Where did that come from?
I was just wondering. I was thinking about how you won't be able to have, like, the wedding that women are always obsessing over. You won't have flowers or anything. She handed me a bag of some sort of orange-dyed corn puffs. An old man walked by us and smiled at her. His eyes met mine, and he quickly looked away.
Flowers? Really?
She asked, rolling her eyes and walking past me, ignoring the way I rolled my eyes back at her. I followed her, nearly tripping over an unsteady child in light-up shoes wobbling by, holding the hand of his mother.
What about Landon? Your mum and David? Don't you want them to be there?
I asked. She turned to face me, and I could see the thought occurring to her in a different way. During the drive, our minds were both so clouded by our excitement over our decision to be wed in Vegas that we forgot about reality.
Oh,
she sighed, staring at me while I caught up to her. We walked to the register, and I could tell what she was thinking. Landon and her mum have to be there when we get married. Have to. And Karen. Karen would be heartbroken if she didn't witness Tessa becoming my wife. We paid for our junk food and caffeine. Well, she fought me and paid for it. I let her.
You still want to go? You know you can tell me, baby. We can wait,
I told her as I buckled my seatbelt. She pulled open the bag of orange puffs and popped one into her mouth.
Yeah, I do,
she insisted. It didn't feel right, though. I knew she wanted to marry me, and I knew that I wanted to spend my life with her. But I didn't want it to start this way. I wanted our families to be there. I wanted my little brother and little Abby to be part of it, walking down the aisle, throwing flowers and rice, and doing whatever crap people make the youngest family members do during weddings. I saw the way her eyes lit up when she proudly told me how much she helped with the planning of Landon's wedding. I wanted everything to be perfect for my Tessa. So when she fell asleep 30 minutes later, I turned the car around and drove her back to Ken's house. When she woke up, surprised but not cursing me out, she unbuckled her seatbelt, climbed into my lap, and kissed me, warm tears running down her cheeks.
God, I love you, Harden,
she said into my neck. We stayed in the car for another hour. I held her on my lap, and when I told her I wanted Smith to throw rice at our wedding, she laughed, pointing out that he'd probably do it very precisely, grain by grain.
2 years later, Tessa. The day I graduated from college, I was so proud of myself. I was so happy with every aspect of my life, except that I didn't want to work in publishing anymore. Yes, Teresa Young, obsessive planner of every detail of her future, changed her mind midway through college. It started when Landon's bride didn't want to pay for a wedding planner. She was adamant about not hiring one, even though she had no idea how to start planning her wedding. Landon helped her, though. He was the perfect fiancé, staying up late to look through magazines with us, missing class to taste 10 different cakes 2 different times. I loved the feeling of being in charge of such an important day for so many people. It was my specialty, planning and doing something for others. During the wedding, I kept thinking that I would love to do this more often, just as a hobby. But as the months went by, I found myself at bridal expos, and the next thing I knew, I was planning Kimberly and Christian's wedding. I kept my job at Vance in New York City because I needed the income. Harden moved to New York with me, and I refused to let him pay all of my bills while I tried to figure out what the hell to do, because though I was so proud of my college degree, I just no longer wanted to work in the field. I will always love reading. Books are forever tied to my soul. But I simply changed my mind. Just like that. Hardin gave me endless crap about this, since I'd always been so sure about my career choice. But as the years went on and I grew up, I realized that I didn't know who I was when I enrolled in WCU. How can people be expected to choose what they want to do for the rest of their life when they're just beginning their life? Landon already had his job lined up, fifth grade teacher at a public school in Brooklyn. Hardin, a New York Times bestseller at the young age of 25, had four books published, and me? Well, I was still working on figuring out my own path, but I was fine with that. I didn't feel rushed in the way I always had. I wanted to take my time and make sure every choice I made was set to make me happy. For the first time, I was putting my happiness before anyone else's, which felt great. I stared at my reflection in the mirror. There were so many times in the past 4 years when I wasn't sure if I would make it through college. And now here I was, a college graduate. Hardin clapped while my mother cried. They even sat together. My mother walked into the bathroom and stood at my side. "I'm so proud of you, Tessa." She was wearing an evening gown. It wasn't really suitable for a college graduation, but she wanted to dress to impress, as always. Her blonde hair was curled and sprayed to perfection, and her nails were painted to match my graduation cap and gown. It was over the top, but she was proud, and I didn't want to take that away from her. She had groomed me to succeed in life and be everything she couldn't, and now, as an adult, I understood that. "Thank you," I responded as she handed me her lip gloss. I gladly took it from her, despite the fact that I didn't want or need to reapply any makeup, and she looked pleased when I didn't fight her on it. "Is Hardin still out there?" I asked. The gloss was sticky and too dark for my liking, but I smiled anyway. "He's entertaining David." She smiled along with me, and my heart filled a little more. My mother's fingers ran over the ends of her curls. "He invited him to that fundraiser he's speaking at." "That will be nice." Things weren't as awkward between my mother and Hardin as they used to be. He would never be her favorite person, but over the past few years, she gained a respect for him that I never would have believed was possible before. I've gained a new respect for Hardin Scott, too. It's painful to think back over the last 4 years of my life and remember the way he used to be. I wasn't perfect either, but he held on to his past so tightly that he broke me in the process. He made mistakes, massive and devastating mistakes, but he paid his dues for them. He would never be the most patient, the most lovable and friendly man out there, but he was mine, always had been. Still, I had needed the distance from him after I moved to New York with Landon. We had been seeing each other casual as Hardin and I could be. He didn't pressure me to move to Chicago, and I didn't beg him to move to New York. It was about a year after Landon's wedding that he finally moved, but we made it work by visiting one another when we could. Hardin more so than me. I was suspicious about his sudden work trips to the city, but I was always so happy when he came and wanted him to stay when he left. Our apartment in Brooklyn was decent. Though he was making a lot of money, Hardin was willing to move into a place that I could help pay for. I worked at the restaurant between planning weddings and classes, and he only complained minimally. We still weren't married, which drove him insane. I kept going back and forth on the subject. Yes, I wanted to be his wife, but I was tired of having to label things. I didn't need that label in the way that I grew up believing I did. As if my mother was reading my mind, she leaned in and adjusted my necklace. "Have you set a date yet?" she asked for the third time that week. I loved when my mother, David, and his daughter came to visit, but she was driving me crazy with her new obsession, my wedding, or lack thereof. "Mother," I warned. I would put up with her grooming me, and I even let her pick out my jewelry this morning, but I wouldn't entertain her when it came to this. She raised her hands into the air and smiled. "Fine." Her defeat came easy, and I knew something was up when she kissed my cheek. I followed her out of the bathroom, and my irritation dissolved when I saw Hardin leaning against the wall. He was lifting his hair up and wrapping a band around the long strands. I loved his hair long. My mother scrunched her nose as Hardin pulled his hair into a bun, and I laughed immaturely at her disgust. "I was just asking Tessa if you two had picked a date for a potential wedding yet," my mother said as Hardin wrapped his arm around my waist and buried his face into my neck. I felt his breath against my neck as he chuckled.
I wish I could tell you, he said as he lifted his head, but you know how stubborn she is.
My mother nodded in agreement, and I was equally annoyed and proud that the two of them were teaming up on me.
I know she is. She gets that from you, my mother accused.
David grabbed hold of her hand and brought it to his lips.
All right, you two. She just graduated college. Let's give her a little time.
I smiled a thankful smile to David, and he winked, kissing my mother's hand again. He was so gentle with her, and I appreciated that.
2 years after that, Harden. We had been trying to get pregnant for over a year now. Tessa knew the chances. I knew the odds were against us, like they always had been, but we still hoped. We hoped through fertility appointments and hoped through ovulation schedules. We fucked and made love every chance we could get. She tried the most ridiculous wives' tales, and I drank some bittersweet, chunky concoction that Tessa swore worked for her friend's husband. Landon and his wife were expecting a baby girl in 3 months, and we were the godparents of little Adeline Rose. I wiped Tessa's tears from her cheeks as she helped plan the baby shower for her best friend, and I pretended not to be sad for us while we were helping paint Addie's nursery. It was a normal morning. I'd just gotten off a call with Christian. We were planning a trip for Smith to come visit us for a few weeks in the summer. He disguised the call as that, but he really was trying to pitch an idea to me. He wanted me to publish another book with Vance, an idea that I liked, but pretended not to. I just wanted to fuck with him and pretend that I was waiting for a better offer. Tessa came bursting through the door, still in her sweats. Her cheeks were red from the cold March air, and her hair was wild from the wind. She was returning from her usual walk down to Landon's apartment, but she seemed rushed, panicked even, making my chest tighten.
Harden!
She exclaimed as she crossed the living room and walked into the kitchen. Her eyes were bloodshot, and my heart sank to the floor. I stood, and she held a hand up, signaling me to wait a moment.
Look,
she said, digging into the pocket of her jacket. I waited silently and impatiently for her to open her hand. A small stick was there. I had seen too many false tests in the last year to think anything of it, but from the way her hand was shaking and the way her voice cracked when she tried to speak, I knew immediately.
Yeah?
Was all I could say.
Yeah.
She nodded, her voice small but full of life. I looked down at her, and she lifted her hands to my face. I hadn't even felt the tears there until she wiped them.
You're sure?
I said like an idiot.
Yes, obviously.
She tried to laugh, but she broke into happy tears, and so did I. I wrapped my arms around her and lifted her onto the counter. I laid my head on her stomach and promised that baby that I would be a better father than either of mine had ever been. Better than anyone had ever been. Tessa was getting ready for our double date with Landon and his wife, and I was flipping through the pages of one of the many bridal magazines Tessa left hanging around the apartment when I heard the sound. A nearly inhuman sound. It came from the bathroom connected to our bedroom, and I jumped to my feet, rushing toward the door.
Harden!
Tessa said again. This time I was at the door, and the anguish in her voice was thicker than the first time she called for me. I pushed the door open and found her sitting on the floor next to the toilet.
Something's wrong!
She cried out, holding her small hands over her stomach. Her panties were on the floor, blood covered them, and I gagged, unable to speak. I was on the floor next to her in seconds, holding her face between my hands.
Everything will be fine,
I lied to her, reaching into my pocket and grabbing my phone. The tone of our doctor's voice on the line and the knowing look in Tessa's eyes confirmed my worst nightmare. I carried my fiancée to the car, and I died a little each time she sobbed during that long, long drive to the hospital. 30 minutes later, we had an answer. They were gentle when they told us Tessa had lost the baby, but that didn't stop the splintering pain that shot through me every time I looked at the complete devastation in Tessa's eyes.
"I'm sorry. So sorry,"
she cried into my chest after the nurse left us alone in the room. I brought my hand under her chin and forced her to look up at me. "No, baby. You have nothing to be sorry for," I told her over and over. I gently pushed her hair back from her face and tried my best not to focus on the loss of the most important thing in our lives. When we got home later that night, I reminded Tessa how much I loved her, how amazing a mother she would be someday, and she cried in my arms until she fell asleep. I wandered down the hall after I knew she wouldn't wake. I opened the closet in the nursery and dropped to my knees. It had been too early to know the sex of our baby, but I had been collecting little things over the last 3 months. I kept them here in bags and boxes, and I needed to see them one last time before I disposed of them all. I couldn't let her see this. I wanted to shelter her from seeing the tiny yellow shoes Karen had mailed us. I would get rid of all of it and take the crib apart before she woke up. The next morning, Tessa woke me up by wrapping her arms around me. I was on the floor of the empty nursery. She didn't say anything about the removal of the furniture or the empty closet. She just sat there, on the floor with me, her head resting on my shoulder and her fingers tracing over the ink on my arms. 10 minutes later, my phone buzzed in my pocket. I read the message to myself and wasn't sure how Tessa would react to the news. She peered up, her eyes focused on the message before her.
"Addie's coming,"
she read aloud. I held her tighter, and she smiled, a sad smile, and moved from my arms to sit up. I stared at her for a long while. It felt that way, at least, and we shared the same thought. We both picked ourselves up off the floor of our would-be nursery and put smiles on our faces so we could be there for our best friends. "We will be parents one day," I promised my girl, as we rode to the hospital to welcome our goddaughter into the world. A year after that, Harden. We had just decided to take a break from trying to conceive. It was winter, I remember clearly, when Tessa came bouncing into the kitchen. Her hair was pulled back into an elegant bun, and she was dressed in a light pink lace dress. Her makeup was different that day. I couldn't put my finger on it. She beamed as she approached me, and I slid out the stool I was sitting on and gestured for her to sit on my lap. She leaned against me. Her hair smelled like vanilla and mint, and her body was so soft against mine. I pressed my lips to her neck, and she sighed, resting her hands on my parted knees. "Hi, baby," I said into her skin.
"Hi, Daddy,"
she whispered back to me. I cocked a brow at her. The way she said "Daddy" made my cock twitch, and her hands slowly traveled up my thighs. "Daddy, huh?" My voice was thick, and she giggled, a silly and out-of-place laugh.
"Not the daddy you're thinking of, pervert."
She playfully and gently swatted her hand over the bulge in my pants, and I put my hands on her shoulders to turn her to face me. She was grinning again, then full-on fucking smiling, and I couldn't quite connect what she was saying.
"See?"
She reached her hand into the front pocket of her dress and pulled something out. It was a piece of paper. I didn't understand, of course, but I've always been known for not getting important shit the first time. She unfolded the paper and placed it in my hand.
"What is that?"
I stared at the blurry text on the page.
You're ruining this moment so terribly right now, she scolded me.
I laughed and lifted the paper to my face. Urine test positive, it read.
Shit,
I gaped, my hand tightening around the paper.
Shit,
she laughed, excitement clear in her blue-gray eyes.
I'm afraid to get too excited,
she quickly admitted. I reached for her hand, crumpling the page between us.
Don't be.
I kissed her forehead. We don't know what will happen, so we should be as excited as we fucking want to be. My lips pressed against her head again.
We need a miracle.
She nodded, trying to joke, but she came off so serious. 7 months later, we had a blonde little miracle named Emery.
6 years after that, Tessa. I was sitting at the kitchen table in our new apartment, tapping away on my laptop. I was planning 3 weddings at once, and I was pregnant with our second child, a little boy. His name was set to be Auden. Auden was going to be a big boy. My stomach was swollen. My skin stretched once again with pregnancy. I was so tired toward the end, but I was determined to stay on task. The first of the 3 weddings was only a week away, so to say I was busy was an understatement. My feet were swollen, and Harden griped about me working so hard, but he knew better than to push it too much. I was finally making a decent income and building my name. New York City is a tough place to break into the wedding scene, but I had finally done it. With the help of a friend, my business was growing and my phone and email were full of inquiries. One of the brides was panicking. Her mother decided at the last minute to bring her new husband to the wedding, and now we had to adjust seating arrangements. Easy enough. The front door opened and Emery stormed past me and down the hall. She was 6 now. Her hair, an even lighter shade of blonde than mine, was twisted into a messy bun. Harden had done her hair for school this morning while I was at the doctor's office. Emery, I called as she slammed her bedroom door. The fact that Landon teaches at the school Addie and Emery attend makes my life easier, especially when I'm working so much. Leave me alone, she cried out. I stood up, my belly touching the counter as I shifted. Harden came out of our bedroom with his shirt off and tight black jeans hanging low on his hips.
What's with her?
He asked. I shrugged. Our little Emery looked as sweet as her mom, but she had her father's attitude. It was a combination that made our lives very interesting. Harden laughed a little as Emery yelled out, I can hear you! She was 6 and already a tornado.
I'll talk to her,
he said as he walked back into the bedroom. He returned with a black t-shirt in his hands. Watching as he pulled the shirt over his head, I had a flashback of the boy I met during my first week of college. When he knocked on Emery's door, she huffed and complained, but he went inside anyway. As he closed the door behind him, I walked over to the door and pressed my ear to the wood.
What's going on with you, little one?
Harden's voice echoed through her room. Emery was a fighter, but she adored Harden, and I loved the way they were together. He was such a patient and fun father to her. I reached my hand down and rubbed my belly, telling the little guy in there, You're going to like me more than your daddy. Harden already had Emery. Auden was mine. I told Harden this often, but he just laughed and said that I'm too much of a pushover with Emery, and that's why she likes him more. Addie's being a brat, Harden's mini-me huffed. I imagined she was pacing around the room, pushing her blonde hair back from her forehead like her father.
Is she? How so?
There was sarcasm in Harden's voice, but I doubted Emery would catch on. She just is. I don't want to be her friend anymore.
Well, baby, she's family. You're stuck with her.
Harden was probably smiling, enjoying the dramatic world of a 6-year-old. Can't I have a new family?
No.
He chuckled, and I covered my mouth to laugh quietly.
I wanted a new family for a long time when I was younger, but it doesn't work like that. You should try and be happy with the one that you have. If you had a new family, you would get a new mommy and daddy and—
No! Emery seemed to hate that idea so much that she didn't let him finish.
See?
Harden said.
You have to learn to accept Addie and the way she can be a brat sometimes, the way that Mommy accepted Daddy being a brat sometimes.
You're a brat too? Her little voice questioned. My heart swelled. Hell yes he is, I wanted to say.
Hell yes I am, he said for me.
I rolled my eyes and reminded myself to warn him about cussing in front of her. He doesn't do it nearly as much as before, but still. Emery went into a story about how Addie said they aren't best friends anymore, and Hardin, being the incredible father that he is, listened and commented on every line. By the time they were finished, I had fallen in love with my brooding boy all over again. I was leaning against the wall when he came out of her bedroom and closed the door behind him. He smiled when he saw me.
Life in first grade is tough,
he laughed, and I wrapped my arms around his waist. You're so good with her. I leaned into him, my belly blocking me from getting too close. He turned me sideways and kissed me, hard.
10 years after that, Hardin.
Really, Dad?
Emery glared at me from across the kitchen island. She tapped her painted fingernails on the granite and rolled her eyes, just like her mother. Yes, really. I told you. You're too young to be going to something like that. I picked at the bandage over my arm. I'd just gotten some of my tattoos touched up the night before. You'd be surprised how much some of them had faded over the years.
I'm 17. It's a senior trip. Uncle Landon let Addie go last year.
My beautiful daughter exclaimed loudly. Her blonde hair was straight, hanging down past her shoulders. She whipped it when she talked. Her green eyes were wildly dramatic as she continued to state her case regarding how I'm the worst father, blah, blah, blah.
This is so unfair. I have a 4.0 and you said...
Enough, honey. I slid her breakfast across the island, and she stared at her eggs like they were as involved in ruining her life as I was. I'm sorry, but you aren't going. Unless you want to reconsider not letting me be a chaperone.
No, no way.
She shook her head with attitude.
Not happening.
Then neither is this trip for you. She stormed off down the hallway, and within seconds Tessa was walking toward me, Emery behind her. Damn it.
Hardin, we already discussed this. She's going on that trip. We already paid for it.
Tessa reminded me in front of Emery. I knew this was her way of showing me who's in charge here. We had a rule, only one rule in our house. No fighting in front of our kids. My children would never hear me raise my voice to their mum. Ever. This didn't mean that Tessa didn't still drive me fucking crazy. She was stubborn and sassy, both lovely traits that only grew stronger with age. Auden came walking into the room with his backpack on his shoulders and headphones in his ears. He was obsessed with music and art, and I loved that. "There's my favourite child," I said. Tessa and Emery made snorting noises and glared at me. I laughed, and Auden nodded. The official teenage boy, hello. What can I say? His sarcasm was advanced for his age, just like mine had been. Auden kissed his mum on the cheek and grabbed an apple from the counter. Tessa smiled, her eyes softening. Auden was affectionate, where Emery was all sass. He was patient and soft-spoken, where Emery was opinionated and headstrong. Neither of them were better than the other. They were just different in their best ways. Surprisingly, the two of them got along very well. Emery spent a lot of her free time hanging out with her little brother, driving him to band practice and going to his art showings.
It's settled then. I'm going to have so much fun on this trip.
Emery clapped her hands and pranced to the front door. Auden said his goodbyes to us and followed his sister out the front door for school.
How did we become the parents of two kids like that?
Tessa asked me while shaking her head. No fucking idea. I laughed and opened my arms for her. Come here. My beautiful girl walked toward me, and leaned into my arms.
"It's been a long road," she sighed,
and I brought my hands to her shoulders and rubbed them. She sank back, relaxing immediately. She turned to me, her blue-gray eyes still holding so much love for me after all these years. After everything, we made it. Whatever the hell our souls are made of, they are the same.
After Ever Happy was written by Anna Todd and read by Elizabeth Louise and Shane East. Post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, technical director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Mike Vecino. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. After Ever Happy is available in print from Gallery Books. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio by Anna Todd, After We Fell, and After We Collided, read by Elizabeth Louise and Shane East.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.